Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing Podcast.
Getting to Iceland from the east coast of the U.S. is a five-hour direct flight, whereas people, I know quite a few people from the U.S. that are taking maybe a 15-hour flight to Buenos Aires and then a two-hour flight down to Rio Galacos and then driving in a truck for an hour, whereas you can take a five-hour flight straight to Iceland and be fishing sea-run browns in the afternoon after you land.
That was Sindre giving us one big reason why Iceland should definitely be on your bucket list this year. We break it all down, fly fishing Iceland, today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how you doing today? It would be really amazing if you could share this episode or any past episode. If you've been enjoying this show and know somebody who would love to learn a little bit about fly fishing or some of the people around it, please share an episode this week if you get a chance. Rare Gear makes unique and innovative fishing gear to help you travel lighter, faster, and fish more often. This telescoping fly rod doesn't need guides and packs small enough to fit in the pocket of your backpack. This is definitely and most likely the most unique rod you've seen this year, so you're going to have to check this one out. You can head over to raregear.com right now to check out this rod. That's R-E-Y-R-Gear.com. Deddy Flies, established in 1928. You know it. They're the oldest family-run shop in the country. Deddy's great mission has always been to supply the fly fishing community with the finest products and services. Every fly they tie is either in-house or tied by just a handful of select tires. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Deddy to grab some of those flies right now. That's D-E-T-T-E. You support this podcast by clicking over to check out our sponsors. Sindre. I definitely cannot even start to pronounce his last name, but I can put it right here and we can listen to him pronounce it himself.
So my full name is Sindre Hlíðar Jónsson, but just say Sindre.
Sindre is here to walk us through what it's like to fish Iceland. We hear about which species are the most targeted and what he's super interested in, some of the benefits of fishing browns in Iceland over other areas around the country and world, and we hear about a new lodge that they're working on opening up in a different part of the country, so they've got this going. You can hear today they've got a bunch of things dialed in, and we are going to jump into it right now. So here you go. Here he is, Sindre from fishpartner.com. How's it going today?
Yeah, pretty good, minus the technical difficulties we were having, or we can't complain.
That's right. I love the technical difficulties. Occasionally those pop up and they're all good. We always get through them, usually, almost always. And can you actually pronounce your name for us so we get it right, your full name?
Sindre Hlíðar Jónsson.
There you go.
Just say that five times fast and you'll be good.
Exactly. So we connected at one of the shows recently, and I think even before that I heard from, I think it might have been Tim Camisa, might have mentioned you, and you got some good stuff going out there in a part of the world which is definitely a bucket list for a lot of people, a lot of talk. I'm not sure how many people are able to get out there, but we're going to dig into Iceland today and probably a little focus on brown trout, sea-run brown trout. I mean, you guys have the place for a lot of these species. So before we get into all that, let's just take us back just quickly into fly fishing. How did you first get into fly fishing? Then we'll take it from there.
So I started fishing, not fly fishing, just your typical spin caster or bait reel or whatever when I was probably 3, 4, or 5. Just it's what you do on the weekends. You go with your parents summer camping and go fishing. And then fly fishing, probably like mid-teens, you start seeing everyone catch a lot of fish around you. So when you try, see what they're doing. And then, yeah, I've just been fishing my whole life. Started guiding in my early 20s and now run this company, Fish Partner, with my partner, Christian. And yeah, don't want to do anything else besides fishing.
Amazing. And how did, mid-teens, so now, did you grow up? Where did you actually grow up?
So I grew up in the suburb town of Reykjavik, the only city on the island. So, I mean, there's fishing everywhere. Like there's a little creek that runs through the town I grew up, which I used to fish a lot. And then my parents had a small cabin in the countryside. We'd go most weekends and there you'd go fishing the lake there for char and brown.
Char and brown. And for Iceland, so you grew up there, you know it. Obviously, you've been there for, you know, your life. What is it? I mean, a lot of people, not only fishing, but just for a destination, like a, you know, a magical place. Why is Iceland this? Maybe this is hard for you since you, you know, have been there. But what makes it so special? Why do people come to Iceland?
Nature. I mean, like I said, we have one city in a like island the size of Kentucky. So it's not very big, but there's about 300,000 people here and a lot of nothing except water and nature.
That's it.
So, yeah, that's why people come here. People don't come here really for the city life. They come here because they want to get away from that.
Yeah, get away from the city and get out into, in the rivers and streams and mountains and stuff. And what is, you know, for the Fish Partner, how did that, because that's kind of the, what you're known for now. How did you take it from kind of guiding into the Fish Partner? How'd that begin?
So my partner, Christian, the founder of the company, he started the company, it was 2013. I started guiding for him and it was just like kind of a small thing, but we started getting a lot more interest from basically, yeah, it kind of snowballed on us. And now we have several lodges, a few employees and basically running operations all over the island. And I'm still trying to do some guiding, but you got to be at the lodges as well, meeting clients.
Yep. That's right.
But it's just been the last 8 years of slowly growing and trying to make a job out of this sport of ours.
That's right. So you got multiple lodges, multiple species. Describe that a little bit. What do you have going? Like if somebody was going to come there, what would they be coming there to fish for?
So it depends on time of year. I mean, the species we have here in Iceland is the main three ones are brown trout, and we have both resident browns and sea run browns. We have Atlantic salmon, and then we have Arctic char, and the Arctic char can be both resident or sea runs. Then the other species we have in the islands are eels and sticklebacks, which is a bait fish. So those are the first three are the only ones we're actually fishing for. It depends what you want to catch, what you want to do. I mean, we have everything from tiny spring creeks where a 15-inch brown is a trophy to giant glacial waters if you want to spay fish for salmon and basically everything in between. Like if you're coming early season, that's the time when we're like, so this time of year, early mm-hmm. April into May, that's when we're fishing for both sea run browns in like rivers all over the island, and then fishing a fishery called Lake Thingvallavatn, which is home to these absolutely enormous brown trout that are landlocked, so not sea runs. We're fishing with those in the spring as well. Then once you get a little further into summer, a lot of the highland trout and char rivers start opening up. It's just gorgeous scenery up there, and there you're not catching the absolute monster. It was more like 16, 20, maybe a big one, 25-inch char or brown, but in much smaller, clear water, a lot of sight fishing, dry flies. The salmon runs like start coming in like any numbers in about late June, early July, and then July, August is usually the best time. And then the fall, we get another run of the sea run browns starting early August, mid-August, best time usually September through to October 20th, when we unfortunately have to stop fishing because the season closes.
There you go. So you have a season closing or season closer. And so this is good. So you got a number of different species here. And, you know, and if I was thinking about it, obviously, I mean, Atlantic salmon, all those species sound great. I would like to do them all. But if we had to separate it, and just say focusing here for a little bit on sea run browns, you mentioned either the spring, April, May, like now, or September. Let's take it to that September window. What does that look like if somebody's planning a trip for sea run browns? Like, take us to the river. Are we talking kind of big rivers or small rivers?
So, for example, so most of the best sea run brown trout rivers are on the southeast coast in an area called Skaftafellsysla, which you can pronounce, I'm sure. And there's actually a huge variety of rivers. So most of the sea run browns rivers are connected to this giant glacial water that is called Skafta. We do fish a little bit in the Skafta for sea run browns, but mostly we're fishing those like smaller tributaries and side rivers. And they can be anywhere from reasonably large water, which you want to use a spay or a switch rod, to basically something you can jump over and uro-nymphing would be your best bet.
There you go. So not only do you have multiple species, but types of gear you're using to target them. So
yeah.
So if you wanted to swing flies with the spay, then you would probably hit maybe some of the little larger stream, medium to larger streams. What does that look like? Take us to the, well, let's go back to the lodge thing. So if we are planning a trip, want to go do these sea run browns, which lodge, I mean, we connect with you and you just say, hey, go down to this one. And that's how we put it together.
So yeah, we're actually opening up a new lodge that will be open start of June. It will be called Battle Hill Lodge. It'll be located right on the banks of one of the smaller tributaries called Tvera. And from there, we'll be fishing multiple sea trout rivers. So people come stay at the lodge, and we have about 5 different fisheries within about 20-minute drive from the lodge. So you can start the day fishing a river like Tvera or Fossala, where you'd be using a single-handed rod and either streamers or nymphing. And then in the afternoon, you can be fishing down in Skafta in Vatnamot with a spay rod. And like, so it'll be a lot of variety there. They're usually using, for the like spay rods, most people are using 7 to 9 weights, 12, 13 footers. Some like with the streamers are sometimes using sink tips, especially on the bigger glacial waters. But then when you get into the smaller rivers, you're going to be using 6, 7, 8 weights. And yeah, depending on what setup you want for, if you're going to be using streamers or nymphs, you might be using a 10 or 11 foot 6 weight for nymphing, or a 9 foot 8 weight for just chugging big streamers at them.
There you go. So it just sounds like there's a diversity of pretty much almost any way you want to fish. Is there also surface activity?
Yeah, so we do, for the sea run browns, we do get them quite a bit, especially in like early September when we still have Iceland standard warm days. We'll get them on like hitch flies.
Yeah.
So it'll be, yep. So just like you're catching for Atlantic salmon. So we'll be hitching for them quite a bit. And I mean, on warmer days, you can get them on dry flies as well. Your more traditional, like just the Elk Hair caddis or something. But your best bet is usually small streamer or nymphing.
Small streamer or nymphing. Okay. And what is the, as far as weather, the hottest, what is the hottest month of the year? And then what does that temperature look like?
So hottest month would be July, and you'd be looking at typical day in the 55, 60s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we get days that go into like the upper 70s.
Sure.
Once a year or so, but they're rare. You're going to be, most summer, it's going to be around 55, 60. So not exactly warm, maybe not cold either, but perfect fishing weather. And so temperature, the bigger issue is the wind. It can get pretty windy up here. I mean, we're on a rock in the middle of the North Atlantic.
Yep.
So, yeah, but I mean, that just varies. You never really know. I mean, we fish every condition there is. You dress warmer.
Yeah, warmer. And casting wise, I guess that can be a struggle for some people. You get a little wind going.
Yeah, that's when you want to bring out the spay rod.
Yep. That's right. Bring out your heavier weapons to go for it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So on these, so if you have the sea run, it sounds like, yeah, you could fish in the smaller rivers, even maybe even swing. Would people be bringing, you know, for their gear, would they bring a single hand? I mean, what would you recommend if they're coming up for sea run browns? What type, how many rods?
I'd say bring both a double-handed rod, 7, 8 weight, 12, 13 foot or something like that. And then 7 or 8 weight single-handed. just so you cover all your bases. Because, I mean, some of the smaller rivers, they're a bit too small for using a double hander.
Yep, perfect.
And then I was just actually fishing out there all of last week, and one of our good friends that was with us, he doesn't use double-handed rod. He fished the whole week with a single-handed, both on the bigger water and the smaller water. And, well, he still caught up plenty of fish. He was just maybe a little more tired at the end of the day with a single-handed on the bigger water.
That's right. That's right. It's still doable with the single-handed. And then if you had a single-handed, let's say you were fishing maybe some of the medium to smaller stuff, what type of setup would you want to be bringing there as far for if you're trying to get some of these browns?
So I'd say mostly you'd want to use floating lines, but bring a couple of sink tips if you need to get it deep. I mean, yeah, it's most of the rivers aren't that big, even the bigger water. So like floating line and then, short sink tip that should get you down everywhere you need to get.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, obviously there's a bunch of gear questions that people might have if they were going to put this together. But let's go back to right now. We're kind of in the mid-April, May period. So you're kind of, are you hot and heavy, like getting rolling here? What does your daily schedule look like?
Depends if I'm in the office or if I'm in the, on the water.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, the season opened on the 1st, and so it's getting ready to go. We're getting a lot of people in already, so people are fishing. So you're either guiding, you're answering calls, or you're at one of the lodges meeting clients.
And do you guys have, how does your guiding, I mean, with all this activity, it's you and your, the founder. How does that look? How do you guys run the show? Do you have like a big staff doing this? How many guides?
So we have about 25 guides working with us now.
Oh, wow.
So, and I mean, some of the, they're spread all over the island. There's some focusing just on the south end, there's some up in the north, some just on the sea trout, and others that are doing everything throughout the season.
Wow. Wow, yeah, this is opera. And are you the, I mean, are there others doing, guiding other operations?
Yeah, so there's, there's quite a few outfitters here in Iceland, and pretty much, yeah, I think all of them have a pretty good reputation. If you go through basically someone that isn't just an Instagram page, I think you're in good hands.
That's right. That's right. So you got, so basically, yeah, there's plenty of other folks out there. It's just that obviously you're kind of homegrown and you guys probably know it as well as anybody. And then you mentioned the species wise. So kind of walking through this. So right now you got the brown action going. If we take it just for a second to the Atlantic salmon, because that also is a super big thing for me and probably a lot of people. I saw a photo of you catching your first steelhead, I think, on Instagram. But, take us to the Atlantic salmon for a little bit. If we had to pick one time, you mentioned, what would be that time? You're thinking kind of July, August, is that would be the peak?
Yeah, July, I'd say, would be the peak. And you're getting all the fresh fish in. There'll be more fish, obviously, all in the river once you get into August. But they can be a little more trickier to catch in August. They'll be in the river for a while, and especially if it's been a warm summer, they get a little lethargic. Then again, though, once you get into September and you get those fall rains, they start to liven up again a little bit, and then you're getting a lot of good takes as well. So yeah, July would be the time. I mean, August can be great, but if you really want prime time for Atlantic salmon in Iceland, it would be July. But then it's also, each fishery will have a little varied window when the run is coming in and all that. So there's a little variety river from river, what would be the best time. But in general, it'd be July.
In July. Okay, yeah, roughly in that time. And then if somebody's coming in there, is there also overlap? Do people come in there for, say, a week or maybe two and hit, Atlantic salmon and brown trout on the same trip?
Yeah, no, we do a lot of combo trips where people fish maybe 2 days for browns, 2 days for char, 2 days for Atlantic salmon.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it depends. Well, obviously, different things are in season at different times. But for example, in July, you're probably not going to be catching sea run browns. But in August, you can go for sea run browns, resident browns, salmon, char, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, so August might be your all around if you wanted to really try to. And I don't know, I mean, if you focus on everything, maybe you're spreading yourself too thin. But would you recommend more of a focus on a species, or is the multiple species an okay way to do it?
I think it just depends on the angler. Do you want to just focus your whole time of trying to get that monster sea trout or trophy Atlantic salmon? Or do you want to just have a good fishing trip with good variety?
Exactly. Yeah, I think for me, if you know, my first trip for me, I would be thinking, okay, I want to get a nice variety, check out the country, maybe check out
multiple. Yeah, see what's right for you.
Yeah, exactly. So probably the August might be the best time to go. But then if you want to focus, say, on July for just Atlantic salmon or either way, this is good. Okay, so, well, what else should we be knowing about if somebody's interested right now thinking about, you know, getting into this? What do we need? Just go to your website and you have all the information there? Or what do you do?
Yeah, you can. So we have all our info on the website. So like I said, I don't know if we mentioned it already, but Iceland has a slightly different fisheries policy than the U.S. Like you said, I've tried to fish quite a bit in the U.S. for both steelhead mm-hmm. and resident trout. And there is no such thing as public water in Iceland.
Oh, right.
It is. So even fisheries or rivers that run through basically public or government land, they all get leased out to outfitter or angling club, or basically the highest bidder bids for the fishing rights in that river. And then they manage access to that fishery for however long the contract was they got.
Wow.
So like the fisheries around our lodge, like Battle Hill, for example, we are the only ones that can take people on that river. So there'll be, and every river basically in Iceland will have a limit on rod. So for example, Fossalar and Þverá, it's about 10 miles of water, and there's only 5 anglers allowed there per day.
There you go.
So there's a lot of exclusivity in it, but I mean, it makes it a little more trickier for like do-it-yourselfers. We do actually like help. Basically, if people don't want to go the guided lodging route, we do actually arrange stuff like that for people, basically hook them up with access in different spots. But you always have to go through either the landowner or outfitter or someone to basically manage the access to where you want to fish.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so essentially, yeah, you got to be, and that's why it'd be good to go with you or some other group, because you guys obviously have it dialed in, and it sounds like you're probably fishing waters that maybe don't have a lot of people around you when you're fishing.
Oh, yeah, no, you'll be you and your guide.
Yeah, that's it.
And yeah, you might, on the dirt trails, you might hit, like, see the other guys that are staying at the lodge at some point. But yeah, there's no combat fishing in Iceland. You get up and you know, okay, this section of river is mine all day. No one else is coming to it.
Bear Vault keeps wild adventure going and assures your next backcountry trip stays memorable and safe. Bear Vault builds a rugged polycarbonate locking canister that keeps bears and wild animals away from your food. Essentially, this is just a bomber case that doesn't allow bears to get in and keeps you from having to worry when you're in the backcountry. I've definitely been out there, had a number of situations with bears, some close encounters, and both black bears and grizzly bears, and it's always a little, you're always thinking like in the back of your mind, did you keep everything clean? Is your camp clean? Did you leave anything out? Maybe you left something in your backpack? With the Bear Vault, you don't have to worry about any of that. Believe it or not, food storage is a key consideration while backcountry hiking, fishing, or camping. And Bear Vault has some really great bonus features like the see-through canister, which makes it real easy to find. Just grab your food, you know where it's at. It's got a wide, easy, open access point, and it doubles as a camp stool. Definitely one of my favorites. You can check in with the crew at Bear Vault right now. Go to wetflyswing.com/bearvault. That's wetflyswing.com/bearvault. Okay, back to the show.
Are you seeing any variation? I know obviously Atlantic salmon, there's a long history of Atlantic salmon, and you know, steelhead numbers are, you know, kind of down now and things like that. Do you see a lot of variation in runs like Atlantic salmon coming back or sea trout?
So sea trout numbers are way up. Atlantic salmon numbers, their run has been, the last 2 years have been very disappointing. It's not been to the like degree you see like out in BC or the Olympic Peninsula, which I was supposed to fish, but they shut it down.
Yep.
But yeah, but the last 2 years, salmon numbers have been down. It's the runs were just not as good as they had been, and everyone has a theory as to why, but no one really has a right answer. But then on the flip side, for some reason, well, we know the reason, C-Ron Brown's numbers are way up. And the reason for that is until about 10, 15 years ago, the popular sentiment here in Iceland was that C-Ron Brown's was a trash fish.
Hmm.
Basically, like, it was food. It was not a sports fish.
Right.
And so there was a lot of killing them. Then about 10, 15 years ago, we started catch and release on them. And, well, the numbers go up massively when you do that to a species that will make 5-10 runs to the ocean in their lifetime and reach up to 20, 25 years in age.
Wow. Wow. So these fish are making multiple 5-10 runs in one fish's lifetime.
Yeah, and even more than that. I mean, there's been some C-Ron Browns that have been tagged that have gone to the ocean 4 or 5 times and still haven't spawned. They've just gone there, eaten, come back, and haven't even reached maturity. So you can have a C-Ron Brown that is in the 27, 28-inch range that isn't even sexually mature yet.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And are people, so now are you able to keep fish? I mean, are people mostly releasing fish?
It's mostly basically all our rivers that we manage are catch and release at this point. If people want to try some fish, especially we run another lodge up in the Highlands where we're fishing a few different rivers up there. And if people want to catch some fish for the table, then there's quite a few high mountain lakes around the lodge that we take people up. And they're packed filled with Arctic char. And I don't know if you're familiar with Arctic char. They're very similar to brook trout.
Yep.
Both in character and look, but they basically, once they're in these high mountain lakes, they populate like brook trouts. So taking a few for sushi or the grill or whatever is fine for the fishery.
No big deal. That's amazing. Yeah. So you said you managing these things, but is this similar? You have the, like, who is managing the fish, like the kind of the population levels and things like that?
So basically, like I said, how it works, we lease access to the rivers from the landowners, be it whoever that is, if it's a farmer or the municipality or the government, and manage the fisheries. But then we have our basically own version of Fish and Wildlife that does stock monitoring and recommendations based on that.
Gotcha. That's cool. So like you said, so the brown trout are booming right now. So, and again, another reason, like, again, if I was putting up a trip, I think August would be cool because you kind of, you know, making sure you get a chance at a little bit of everything. And then lodge wise. So when somebody comes into you, like say I came in or somebody's coming in new tomorrow and they say, hey, I want to go here. What lodge? I guess you just have a little conversation with them. Is that how that works to figure out where they want to go?
Yeah, it just depends on what they want to come. Like I said, we have a few different ones around the island, all like kind of focused on different things. We have the new sea trout lodge. Then we have another one called the Highland Fishing Lodge, where we're fishing rivers called Kaldakvisl and Tungnau. That's for Arctic char and brown trout. And that's just the summer months we're running trips there. So June, July, August, because we're at a bit of elevation there. So we can't really get there until in the summer months. And then we have another lodge around Lake Þingvallavatn. And then other fisheries where we manage that we don't have a lodge ourselves yet. We just contract with local guest houses and hotels if people want to go fish those.
There you go. And the lodge down here for the sea trout, this new lodge you guys have going, describe that a little bit. What does that look like? Is this kind of a super, a lodge with swimming pool and stuff like that? Or is it more of a, like a cabin sort of stuff?
Somewhere in between. It is not your hotel fishing, but basically we took it's not actually old. It was built in the 80s on a farmhouse and basically completely remodeled it to be a fishing lodge. So we'll have 4 twin rooms and 3 single rooms, multiple bathrooms, big back deck right on the river. And so it's cozy, big, everyone has their own room, but it's not a 5-star hotel either if you're looking for that experience.
Yeah.
If you want that experience, we can definitely set something up for you. But for the sea trout, that's not what it is.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's for the sea trout and the new one coming. And then if we go back to the, say, that medium, small river, somebody's using a single-handed rod for these sea trout. Take us to the water there for a second. What does that look like if they were swinging, like talk about the flies and the setup. Are they potentially using like a dry fly setup swinging for these fish?
Usually not. Basically, floating line. So yeah, we prefer just floating lines, and then maybe a 7-8 foot leader, and size anywhere from 6 to 12. We're usually not using those monster flies for the sea trout. Pretty small streamers, like generally speaking. Patterns, it'll be, actually we use a lot of like classic streamer patterns, maybe with like a bead head or a skull head, so like Mickey Finn's, Black Ghost, stuff like that. And then just very flashy attractor flies like Super Tinsel or something in that vein. And then if you're going to be nymphing for them, basically, well, you can't beat a pheasant tail trying to catch a trout ever. But then we also use a lot of the rubber leg flies, basically like a pheasant tail rubber leg with rubber legs, or Copper John with rubber legs.
That's it. So in the streamers, so smaller streamers, you're swinging with a little bit of weight to get down. So you could just use a dry line and just, kind of swinging it down like 45 degrees down and across?
Maybe not quite 45, maybe a little more, a little more across and down. So just to get it a little down. But then, obviously, if it gets very cold and, if it's getting very cold, then we'll throw on a sink tip maybe and just try to get a little deeper, closer to them to get a response.
So a similar sort of game when you're swinging flies.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, and... So yeah, I think we've got that picture, that broad picture of what it looks like without digging too deep into some of the fishing. But if somebody was wanting to put a trip together, is that pretty straightforward? Like, let's just say you probably get plenty of people coming in from the U.S. How does that look? They just fly into the biggest international airport there?
So they fly into the only international airport.
That's right.
So and basically, you start off, obviously, you email us, tell us what you want to do, what you want to fish for, what you want to catch. We'll set up a trip. Then you fly into Keflavik International Airport just outside of Reykjavik. You'll have direct flights from basically any major city on the East Coast and a couple on the West Coast, like San Francisco and Seattle.
Okay.
And from there, you basically either one of the guides or our shuttle service will pick you up at the airport and take you straight to wherever you're fishing.
Yep, that's it. So pick up at the airport and you're rolling. So within, typically are people coming in like on a like a Sunday and staying for the week sort of thing?
We have no rule on it. Like I said, we have so many operations that basically if you want to start, it doesn't matter what day you want to start.
Oh, nice.
Just set it up based on what dates you have.
Yep. So what dates you have. So you can set up any time and then any length too, right? You could stay there for whether it's 3 days or 2 weeks or more, right?
Yeah. So we do everything from one day, like day trips basically, to multi-week trips all over the island. And yeah, if you want to if people want to do maybe fishing for a week and then a few days of sightseeing, we're also a fully licensed travel agency. So we can set all that up as well.
Gotcha. How similar is this to, you know, we've got a few listeners in, you know, around the world and Europe and things like that, other places where you have lots of Atlantic salmon and sea trout. Is this a similar experience as far as the fishing? Or I'm not sure if you do much of exploration around there, but for those that haven't been to Iceland, is there any comparison to this as far as the fishing that we're doing here?
So Atlantic salmon, the difference if you want to compare to like Scotland or Norway is in Iceland, we have more fish, but our salmon are smaller.
Okay.
Like if you want those giant 30, 40 pound Atlantic salmons, then people have been going to Norway not anymore Russia, but if you wanted numbers, Iceland has usually been the safer bet. Simply, we have good runs, but we don't have those absolute monsters. I mean, every year there'll be 20, 25-pound salmon caught here, but you're going to be catching a lot more, basically anywhere from 5 to 10-pounders.
Right, which is, and 25, yeah, obviously that's a monster. But yeah, you're talking about those giants sometimes that you hear about a 40-pounder or something even bigger.
Yeah, we just don't have those in our rivers here. For sea trout fishing, our sea trout fishing is, well, I think the only place you could compare it to is probably Argentina.
Yeah. That's the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear this. You always, well, at least from more of a U.S. base, you always think, Argentina, because it's closer. But so that's it. So you got these giant browns.
Yeah, because I mean, everywhere, anywhere I've been to in the countries around us in the UK, Norway, whatever, they get sea run browns, but they don't get nearly as big as the ones we have here.
Yeah. And are these, I'm not even sure, you know, as far as the like wild fish, are these, is this a native?
Yeah. So all the species we have are wild and native.
Yeah, that's it.
So there's been no stocking. The only non-native species you might risk catching is pink salmon.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, we have a few of those straggle over from Russia every year.
Oh, and those are just random, like natural straying sort of thing?
Yes. Oh, no, basically, I think in the 70s or something, the Russians decided to populate their Atlantic coast with pink salmon, and they've been kind of spreading throughout Europe ever since.
Oh, there you go. Yep, the pinks. That's the one that nobody likes as much as the other. If they were coho or chinook, they might be more.
Then I would be probably you'd be happy about it. But yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. So, yeah. Well, that's cool. So another, and again, that's the difference between like the South America stuff is that those aren't native. You know, those were brought in. So you're fishing for a native sea run brown trout, which is pretty amazing, and catching in monsters, potentially big fish.
Yeah, I mean, last year, the biggest we had in our rivers was 39 inches. The year before was 41. And I mean, we're catching quite a few. Like, if you're fishing a week for sea run browns, like, you're probably going to catch quite a few over 30 inches.
Wow. There you go. Okay. When people are coming up there, what's the most common, thing that people maybe forget or aren't thinking about when they do this trip?
Layers, lots of layers.
Oh, really? Yeah. So people they're expecting sunshine and warm.
Yeah. I mean, even like on nice, warm 70 degree days or whatever, most of our rivers are still going to be in that 45, maybe 50 degree range. So if you're going to be waiting in that, it's going to be cold.
Yeah. That's right. So normal. So just plan like you're heading up to, whatever, Alaska, Russia, anywhere like that. Just bring wintertime. This is even though it's even summertime, you might get a July where it can get a fairly chilly if you get some wind coming, things like that.
Exactly. So just bring lots of layers and then better to have them and take them off than not.
Yeah. Right on. Well, anything else? I know we kind of zipped through some of this here, and it's almost overwhelming because there's so much going on. You know what I mean? I want to jump in deep into brown trout, but at the same time, like, well, Atlantic might be just as cool. You know, anything else you would tell somebody if they're thinking about, putting this together, or let's just say they already have a trip in mind. What do they need to do to get prepared for the trip?
So especially if you're going to be fishing for the big browns and like or sea run browns, make sure you have good backing. You really don't want to fish into a fish of a lifetime and then get spooled.
Right.
And yeah.
So you're getting a fish that's taking you out and it's running on you sometimes. They're taking you way into the backing.
Yeah. Especially if you're in big water and they turn downstream, your only chance is running after it.
Which is fun to do. I see, some of the photos you guys have out there are definitely tight quarters and things like that. But like you said, you have areas where you're fishing big, broad streams, and you could literally follow a fish down quite a ways.
Yeah, exactly. And just make sure you have warm clothes, good backing, and be a little prepared for a lot of variety in the weather. Weather can be rough, but it usually changes pretty frequently, so never lasts too long. It can always get worse.
Yeah, exactly. What is the on the char? Give us a little snippet there on the char. What does that look like as far as the fishing? Is that quite a bit different than fishing for browns?
Yeah, they're like very similar in many ways. I'd say they're not as inclined to taking a streamer as a brown. Mm. They'll be... Like, I mean, you do throw for them, especially once you get in a later season, they're getting a little aggressive pre-spawn, but typically we're mostly fishing for them either like nymphing or with dry flies because they'll very happily take a dry fly. I mean, they don't get as big. I mean, I know there's places like Northern Canada where you can get like 40-inch char or something. We don't have those here, but like up in the Highland Rivers, catching quite a few 16 to 20 inch char, and then a monster would be 24, 25 inches.
Yeah.
And that's huge. But usually with a char, it's usually a bit of a numbers game. You're getting quite a few fish, and like once you find some, there's usually a few with them. few with it to take your fly. So there's usually a lot of action when you're fishing for those.
Yeah. And what sort of bugs? You said that dries. What sort of bugs or flies are used on the surface?
So basically the two main, by far biggest hatches we have are caddis and midges.
Okay.
So different chronomids and then a few different types of caddis. So basically pretty well set for dry fly fishing in Iceland with just the Elkhair caddis and black gnat in different sizes.
There you go. Different sizes. Say some big stuff down to maybe even like 10 up to what, like a 16 or 18?
Yeah. Something like that. And then for the nymphing, it's very similar as well. I mean, like I said, the main two bugs that they're eating is going to be caddis or midges. So a lot of flies you'd use, for example, in the West Coast rivers or out in Montana, like would work there. Basically any caddis pattern or midge pattern or, and then obviously a few attractors in there. I mean, we have some mayflies, but they're very rare. Like I saw one mayfly hatch last year.
Right. So depending on the year, so you can't, it's just bring a few patterns. And do you guys have, are there places to buy flies? Are there shops there in Iceland?
Yeah. So but Reykjavik alone, I think has about 12 fly shops.
Oh, wow.
And all of our lodges as well have like small fly shop that you can basically buy flies, leaders, whatever you might have forgotten or didn't have the right stuff off.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So now we're adding the Arctic char into this. Yeah, 16, 20 inches is amazing. That's a good fish. And on the surface, potentially getting some. Are you fishing also? Is this rivers and kind of end? Is there lake, still water stuff too?
Yeah. We for the char, you're both catching them in rivers and lakes. So actually, like the lakes, Lake Thingvallavatn actually has quite large char as well. Then we're fishing for them, like I said, up in those highland rivers, especially some gorgeous scenery. And yeah, they'll be in, basically, if you find running water in Iceland, there's a lake or a pond that doesn't freeze to the bottom, there's a pretty good chance that there's char in it. So even when we're fishing for salmon or sea run browns, there's usually a bit of bycatch of Arctic char.
Jackson Hole Fly Company may still sound like a new brand to you, but they've actually been designing and manufacturing fly fishing gear for a long time, actually since 1978, which actually takes it back to some of my past, 78. That's when I was around a local fly shop as well, when I was a youngster. But in 2020, they launched jhflyco.com and are selling gear directly online all over the country. You can take a look right now. They've got a huge selection of flies, gear, reels, accessories. I've got a killer rod that I'm using. I got some flies in the box. And you can actually get 25% off right now if you go to jhflyco.com/swing. Really quick and easy chance for you to support this podcast and to support a local shop by clicking through that link. And that's how we're doing it. We're working it. We support them. They support us. And we support you with some good content. I hope you're enjoying this, and I hope you have a chance to check out Jackson Hole Fly Company at jhflyco.com/swing.
Well, this is good. I think my questions will have to leave until we get to planning the actual, the trip here. But like you said, if people want to dig into this more, you said the best place to go would be just go to fishpartner.com and where do they go there? Is there a place where you guys have resources they dig in all this information?
Yeah. So basically you can look at, we have different articles on fishing in Iceland, information on all our fisheries that we manage, and you can always just click the call us or send us an email button.
Yeah. I'm curious, we mentioned kind of something, things that people don't think about, the wind, the cold, things like that. Where Iceland for those, again, it seems like that place is this remote, amazing place if you haven't been there. What's another common myth that people have about Iceland that maybe isn't necessarily true?
Oof, good question. put me on the spot here. I can't really think of much.
And think about that for a little bit. I'll let you think about that one. We'll come back to that a little bit.
We'll come back to that one, yeah.
Exactly. I'm just trying to just paint that picture again. For me, I'm just thinking about it of, okay, you see a lot of photos, you see a lot of beautiful, you know, and you hear about people that are going there just not even for fishing. They're just going there just for the natural beauty. And I guess it's just because it's one of those, almost like one of those natural wonders of the world, right? You got these waterfalls and cliffs. And I mean, for you being there, what is the thing? What keeps you in Iceland, right? Like, why not go somewhere else? Why not travel to Europe and move out of the place? Obviously, you have a career, but if you didn't have all that stuff going.
Yeah, I like the lack of people. I like the space. I mean, like I said, about 80% of the population lives in one small city, and most of the rest of it is either farmland or just complete wilderness. So there's a lot of space for, if you're an outdoorsman, if you want to fish or hike or hunt or whatever, there's a lot of stuff for you to do. If your like idea of a great vacation is Fifth Avenue in New York City, then maybe not the place to be. But yep. I like smaller places with a lot of outdoor stuff, so it's the perfect place for me.
Yeah. How do you do when you come in? I think I saw you, maybe it was at Denver, I can't remember, but when you come into the city and sort of stuff, do you like that little break of lots of people or no?
I like it for like 5 days. Then yeah. I want to get away.
That's right.
Like, no, like even like we do the Edison show and we'll just go into New York City after that for a few days just to, and it's fun, it's nice, but there's too many people there.
Yeah, you're ready to go back.
And not enough fishing.
Not enough fishing, exactly. It seems like you see a lot of waterfalls. Is that just, are waterfalls kind of everywhere? And people are fishing. I guess salmon are obviously heading up and hitting waterfalls and having to either turn around or spawn, right?
There's absolutely everywhere waterfalls. I mean, we're quite a bit of mountainous. The island's pretty mountainous. So every piece of water basically has a waterfall, and we have a lot of water. So I don't know. I saw some statistics somewhere that said there was like over 10,000 of them on the island.
Wow. Yeah. So it's pretty much everywhere you go. And you're traveling around, like you said, just by car, pretty easy. You guys are getting around between lodges, things like that.
Yeah. So basically all along the coast of the island, there's basically a paved road. It's the one highway, Highway 1. And then other than that, it's a lot of like, if you're going up into the highlands or stuff like that, it's just dirt tracks. So 4x4 get you anywhere.
All right. Perfect. Well, anything else you want to leave us off before we get out of here? I think some of the fishing specifics we'll leave maybe for questions that people have for you. But yeah, anything else you want to shed some light on?
Just when are we planning your trip?
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to follow up with. I've been thinking about Iceland for a long time, many, many years. You know what I mean? Like, this is way before we connected. And that's kind of the cool thing about it is when you run into somebody that has a good program, it opens up a door. They'll be like, okay, this is definitely a place. And like you said, there's multiple outfitters that are doing it. But it sounds like obviously you've been there your whole life. So you must know it better. Do you feel like you know it better than anybody else out there in the country?
I know my waters better than anyone else.
Yeah, that's
I'll
right.
Put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. What is it? So you've been doing the guiding since you were in your teens, and how old are you now?
32.
Yeah. So young 30s, and you've been doing this quite a while now, and obviously part of the fish partner. If you weren't doing the fish partner thing, if you didn't start guiding, what do you think you'd be? What would you be pro in other than this? Oof. If you had something else?
I don't want to think about that.
Really?
That's a horrible thought.
That's it. So you love the fishing, everything you love. There's every aspect of this. This is like the perfect gig for you.
Yeah, no, I basically wouldn't want to do anything. I'm either on the water with clients, fishing myself, in between running to the lodges and meeting clients. So, yeah, I don't see myself doing anything else.
Yeah, and from the business end of the perspective, is it your partner, or do you have how do you guys make sure you're kind of optimizing the business end of it?
So basically, me, my partner, and then we have one other guy that's working with us here in the office. And then we just have, obviously, lodge staff and the guides.
Yeah.
So it's just the three of us and our bookkeeper. They're taking care of the bookings and all that admin stuff. And then, well, we have some absolutely fantastic guides and lodge staff that take care of clients once they're on the ground.
Right. So as far as finding new people coming in and, you know, kind of the marketing stuff, you guys obviously are building a name there, but that's not as much of a challenge to get new people in the door?
Not so much anymore. I mean, I think like, strangely as it is, I think the COVID year was a good year, like 2020. I mean, like, the island was shut down, so basically you had a whole year where we didn't have a lot of money coming in, but we had a lot of time to figure out new marketing ideas, fish ourselves, get some promotional materials and all that.
Right. Right. No, that's a great point. That's one thing we haven't talked a ton about on this is COVID, just because it was such a negative, annoying thing. But now that it feels like we've kind of come out of it for the most part, when you look back at it, yeah, you see some positives there. The fact that you guys had a chance to really look at what was going on and maybe double down on things that you wanted to do now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you basically in the normal fishing year and season, things are so busy, you don't really have the time to basically, like, reevaluate everything and figure what you want to do and how you want to run things. But, well, when there's no clients for an entire season, you all of a sudden have a lot of time.
Right. And how are you guys now? What's the double down now from here, this year, next year? What are the things you're going to be doing more of that maybe you weren't doing before?
Focusing more on the sea trout, like I said, finishing that lodge renovation now. I think that's what we want to do. I mean, during the COVID, we fished a lot of sea trout and just figured people need to do it. I mean, getting to Iceland from the east coast of the U.S. is a 5-hour direct flight, whereas I know quite a few people from the U.S. that are taking maybe a 15-hour flight to Buenos Aires and then a 2-hour flight down to Rio Galacos and then driving in a truck for an hour, whereas you can take a 5-hour flight straight to Iceland and be fishing sea run browns in the afternoon after you land.
That's it. That's the one of the selling points for sure is that, yeah, if you want sea run browns, you know, good size, big fish, and it's just easy. It's an easier trip to put together. And
yeah, exactly.
That's very cool. All right. Well, did you track down what you were going to be going pro on if it wasn't fishing?
I'd probably be working construction or something.
So you don't have any other hobbies. So fishing is your hobby and that's your main thing.
No, I'd probably be like working on dirt bikes or something.
Oh, nice. There you go. There you go. Yeah.
That'd be probably what I'd be doing now.
That's right.
A shop, working on dirt bikes.
Oh, that sounds pretty awesome. Are people tearing around on dirt bikes around Iceland quite a bit?
Yeah.
Like dirt tracks and all that stuff.
Dirt bikes, ATVs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's just once you get into the interior of the island, it's mostly just dirt trails. So a lot of water. And actually in the last few years, mountain biking started to get very popular here because, well, mountain bikers like dirt trails.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I can see mountain biking being amazing. And okay, perfect. Well, how about now, you mentioned, so you got this new lodge coming here that you guys are finishing up. Say if you look out a year from now, are you guys going to be looking to expand to more lodges, or do you have a feel for what's new coming up?
Nothing concrete right now. I mean, it's always, like I said, was talking about how the fishing rights here are controlled. Basically, you have to go for public auction to see if you can get that new fishery you want. So you never really know beforehand, before the auction, if you're going to get it.
Yep, right. So there's a lot of you don't know, just unknowns there. So you can't really look out and say, yeah, this is the area we want to expand into in, you know, next year or anything like that as easy.
Yeah. No. So there's always something on the horizon, but you can't really double down until you see what comes out of the boxes when they open the auction.
Okay. And you mentioned here we talked a little bit about, it sounds like things are pretty natural. There's not a lot of people there. Are there any, you know, we have kind of a little segment called the Conservation Minute. Are there any things that people should be thinking about that might look into, or are there any issues out there that you think of that might be affecting, you know, kind of some of the species or things we can do?
Do not eat farmed salmon, farmed Atlantic salmon, number 1, 2, and 3. Basically, we've seen it already in the last 2 decades, how these Norwegian companies started giant fish farms off the coasts of Scotland, Norway, Chile, and basically devastated their salmon stocks. And they're trying to do the same here, trying to open these salmon pens all over the place. And it'll be a disaster. But I mean, if we stick together and we don't buy farmed Atlantic salmon, maybe we can stop it from happening.
There you go. That's a great point. So no farmed Atlantic salmon. And where would somebody go if they want to get involved in this or learn more about it? Is there an organization or group or anything like that?
So yeah, North Atlantic Salmon Fund has been quite active in this, trying to basically keep these salmon farms out. And they have a lot of literature on their website you can check out. Another thing, and I will say, you can if you find land-based Atlantic salmon farmed salmon, you're good. It's the open sea pens that we're worried about. There's a few companies, I think even Patagonia is involved in some projects with it, where they're doing basically close containment on land salmon farming, which is the only way to do it if you're not going to risk wild stocks.
There you go. Okay. I'll put a link in the show notes to that organization so people can learn more about what they have or how they can get involved. Very good point here. Well, let's take it out here. The 222, we haven't done it in a little while, but kind of top two flies, tips, and resources. And let's stay on the browns, kind of the sea trout. And maybe you mentioned it, the gray ghost. If you had to pick two flies for browns you can only pick two, what would they be?
Super tinsel. Oh, I don't know if you're familiar with that. I'll send you a photo. So a super tinsel. And then probably, it's not going to be your most productive fly, probably, but it is going to be the most fun take. So any small single hook hitch tube.
What was that?
Any small micro hitch tube.
Okay, micro hitch tube.
Yeah, basically the takes you get when they do hit a micro hitch is just insane.
Nice.
Basically, sometimes they'll get completely airborne.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. I'll try to find some links there. Maybe I can grab a photo from you and put those in the show notes. And then what about some tips? So you're out there fishing, you got somebody that's maybe there with a single-handed rod, and they're trying to get that fish. What would you tell them? Do you got a couple of tips if you're guiding them?
I think a lot of anglers could deal with basically not running up to the banks and start casting. Just sit there, watch the water a little bit, and then approach it a little more carefully than you see a lot of people do. I mean, sea run browns, for example, they can be pretty spooky. So if you're just running along the bank and straight to the water, splashing line, basically the fish might be gone before your line, no fly even touches the water. So just take it easy. Take a few steps back, watch the water for a little bit, see what's going on, and then very carefully approach the water before you start catching, especially on those smaller rivers.
There you go. So take your time and just kind of sneak up, maybe even on your hands and knees if you have to.
Yeah. I mean, there's some rivers where you definitely want to do that.
Yep. There you go. Okay. And what else? You got one more. So I'm looking at some more photos of guys sitting up playing huge fish on top of cliffs and things like that. It's pretty amazing. What other tip would you get? Say somebody, is it hard? You come up there, is everybody getting into fish, or is it a time where there could be struggles?
I mean, of course there can be struggles. It's fishing. I mean, and it obviously depends hugely what you're targeting and what. I'd say if we're talking still about the sea run browns, I think your biggest issue is going to be weather cooperating. Especially if you're coming on prime time, September, October, the fish are going to be there. They're probably going to be willing to take a fly. Matter is if you hit that bad 3-4 days or whatever you pick to fish and it's windy and rough, you basically just have to have that endurance just to keep getting your fly out there. Eventually you get a right drift despite the conditions and they'll take.
Yeah. Okay, good. You just got to keep with it. And yeah, this is amazing. The Arctic char are unbelievable, aren't they, when you look at the colorations? And
oh, absolutely stunning animals. And
wow.
I'd say they're a very underrated sports fish. I think they don't get as big as the browns, but pound for pound, they fight absolute crazy.
Oh, no kidding. See, that's the one thing I think we'll have to... I joke about this a lot, but maybe get you on later to talk more about, drill into, because the Arctic char... Yeah, I mean, the photos, just the colorations, right? I mean, they're obviously kind of a spawning thing, but they're getting those bright reds and oranges around their fins.
Yeah, and you can get them in basically a million different colors, or not a million, but they'll be anything from very silvery back to yellowish belly to dark black to fiery red stomach.
Wow.
That is amazing. Cool. All right. And what about a resource? Like we said, if you want to dig in more, people can either call you, but are there other resources where people, maybe kind of videos or books, magazines, kind of, you know, websites where people can dig more and learn about Iceland fishing and kind of just overall?
I'd say YouTube is probably your best bet. There's a lot of great films and videos there on fishing in Iceland. So if you just type in fly fishing in Iceland, you'll get a lot of good hits there.
Oh, good. Okay, I'll do that. I'll type that in right now and add a something in the show notes, something that I think is interesting. So, perfect. Well, I will let you get out of here. This has been a good little intro to Iceland. You know, fly fishing Iceland, right, is probably the key word that people are searching for when they're coming out there. And you guys are popping up and providing some cool stuff. So I guess we'll send them out to fishpartner.com.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to hearing from you again soon.
So there you go. Another big one in the books. If you want to grab those links, grab those show notes, and grab everything else we talked about today, wetflyswing.com/321. 321, working our way up the 300 tree. And how far and how long it takes us to climb that tree is going to be, I guess, up to all of us. If you have a episode idea you want to share, you can actually send me an email, dave@wetflyswing.com. It's a great way to let me know what you're interested in and help me produce a episode that you would love. Again, reminder, if you get a chance, would love it if you can share this episode. If you found some value in it, we would appreciate that. That's how we have been able to grow this show, find new people, and help support the community. I'm going to be getting out of here right now, but I am excited for the next episode. I've got a killer one coming in the morning. We're going to be getting into a little more conservation, which I always love to dig into. So I hope you have a good day. I hope you have a good night. I hope you have a good, maybe middle of the night. Maybe you're on your way to a trip right now, on the way to a destination. But I hope, and I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. I will talk to you soon. See you hopefully on the water and hopefully online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.